Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is a special holiday edition of Intelligent Medicine. Yeah, we're live. We're live when lots of shows are canned and they've got guest hosts. It's hard to find anything listenable on the radio this weekend as we approach Christmas and everybody's busy and many people are off to their destinations. I'll be off next week as I celebrate Christmas and New Year's with my family. But this program is live. That means you can call us. We're here. You can come directly into the doctor's office and pose your question about medicine or health, nutrition, anything that's on your mind, or maybe share some year-end's good wishes with us. We're open to that. Anything goes on today's Intelligent Medicine. 877-726-8255 is our number this hour and next. To make it simple, it's 877-726-TALK, and you can call us with whatever is on your mind. We've got lots to talk about this weekend. There's lots of stories that, even though it's kind of a slow news cycle on the health front, there's plenty of stuff going on, so we're going to share that with you this hour. Among the stories we're going to touch upon, we're going to talk about a diet for autoimmunity. According to a new study, a change in diet could be beneficial to people with autoimmune diseases. Well, that comprises multiple sclerosis and Crohn's disease and rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune thyroiditis, so-called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and on it goes. So many people suffering from autoimmunity these days. Well, the study suggests that diet may have a crucial role to play. Also, one of the most complete studies ever done, very sophisticated study that shows the relationship between levels of key nutrients and the risk of cognitive decline. Yeah, it's now a proven link. Feed your head, as Grace Slick once said, part of the Grateful Dead. Some of you may remember what that has to do because you may be suffering from cognitive decline, but yeah, you weathered the 60s and 70s. We'll take your phone calls. 877-726-8255 is our number. And there's an article in the British Medical Journal this week about the pervasiveness of alcohol-related themes on greeting cards. And the proposition here is, does alcohol and greeting cards undermine public health messages about harmful drinking? And this comes to us from the UK, where drunkenness is the national sport. If you go anywhere in England on a Friday or Saturday night, say in Liverpool or Birmingham, you'll see throngs of drunken people, people sprawled on the sidewalk, people teetering in the street. And this is a big problem because all kinds of health problems ensue from alcohol intake. And in fact, in the past, we said, well, you know, a little bit of alcohol, moderate drinking is good for you. It protects the heart. But it turns out that according to more recent studies, while there may be some heart benefits to very moderate drinking, of course, people who undergo moderate drinking, they think it's moderate. Moderate drinking in Germany and England and Australia and in the U.S. and especially on campuses may mean two or three drinks per day. So that's not really moderate drinking. Studies suggest that even minimal drinking may have harmful effects in terms of many types of cancer and certainly can increase the risk of stroke. So yeah, definitely this is a public health problem. So what they're saying here is that themes of drunkenness on cards are popular, but they send the message that this is okay. They normalize drunkenness. And some examples I looked at while in the card store the other day. Lots of cards getting into the Christmas spirits with pictures of booze bottles and martini glasses, as if, yeah, Christmas means you're going to get some booze and you're going to drink. Drunken Santa is a big theme in many popular depictions of Christmas. And one card says, it's got a pictures of beer glass, it's the most wonderful time for a beer. Now, really, is that in the Christmas spirit? They do a little history here. They say that Sir Henry Cole is widely credited with inventing the first Christmas card in the UK in 1843, and actually depicted a scene showing people drinking. So the tradition was established very early. And in 1980, they did a survey of greeting cards, a study, that revealed themes that suggested getting drunk as a natural and desirable concomitant of celebrations, and that drunkenness is humorous, enjoyable, and harmless. A billion greeting cards are sold in the UK annually. Alcohol remains a popular theme. Phrases such as, let's get wrecked, all the gin, and trolleyed, I guess that's a Brit expression for getting destroyed, are printed across images of people clearly drunk, surrounded by empty bottles, drinking directly from a bottle, or in some cases, unconscious. Yeah, that's clearly not in the holiday spirit. 10 million people across the UK are drinking at levels which increase their risk of health harms. Extrapolate to the US, so that's probably more like 30 or 40 million. Alcohol consumption is the leading risk factor for ill health, early death, and disability in the younger populace, those aged 15 to 49. Binge drinking, big problem on campuses. And one of the new trends is that women are engaging in it to an extent as never before, because you come a long way, baby. You've earned it. You can now hold your own with the guys. The authors of this article in the British Medical Journal believe that the responsibility for choosing cards lies with the purchaser. They're against censorship of the card. So, quote, perhaps it is worth reflecting the next time that you choose one, whether the message is one you condone and wish to pass on, they conclude. And here's the proof is in the pudding here, because, baby, the times, they are a-changing. Keith Richards, the legendary drinker and drug user, a marvel of preservation, as he nears the age of 75 and is about to go on tour for just one more time with the boys. Rolling Stones will be doing a worldwide tour in 2019. Yes, Keith Richards has quit drinking. Richards, who will be 75, who just turned 75, says, quote, he got fed up with it and knew that it was time to quit. Over the past year, he said he's been cutting back drastically. He's now down to an occasional beer or glass of wine. Quote, I pulled the plug on it. I got fed up with it, Richards told Rolling Stone magazine in a recent interview about the Stones' upcoming tour. It was time to quit, just like all the other stuff. And his bandmates, including guitarist Ronnie Wood, who went sober in 2010, told the magazine he does notice a difference in working with Richards. Quote, he's a pleasure to work with. Woods told Rolling Stone, much more mellow. He's open to more ideas. Whereas before, I kind of grit my teeth and go, he's going to give me some blank for saying this. Now he'll say, that's cool, man. Richards says, quote, it was interesting to play sober. So there you have it. The ultimate apostle of getting wrecked, Keith Richards, has become a role model for sobriety. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 877-726-8255 is our number. That's 877-726-TALK. We'd love to hear from you this hour or next. So as we proceed with this holiday edition, we're live with Intelligent Medicine.
Ladies and gentlemen, listen up. It's me, your immune system. I'm always hard at work defending you against the many disease-causing viruses and bacteria that you are exposed to every day. But sometimes I need help to defeat the bad bugs. Luckily, our friends at Kyolic have come to the rescue. Kyolic has two super immune-enhancing supplements, Kyolic Immune Formula 103 and Kyo Green Harvest Blend Immune Defense. Kyo Green Harvest Blend is a power-packed blend of organic and naturally sourced grasses, ancient grains, fruits, veggies, herbal extracts, and spirulina in a fast-dissolving drink mix for a quick and easy way to support immunity. Kyolic Immune Formula 103 combines immune-boosting nutrients with aged garlic extract. Aged garlic extract has been clinically shown to support a healthy immune response and reduce both the duration and severity of cold and flu symptoms. Help me protect you with Kyolic supplements and nutritional drink mixes to fortify your immune health today. Available at fine natural health retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and we're live. Yeah, wow, big surprise. You can call us, 877-726-8255. Yeah, it's a holiday, but I'm right here behind this microphone where I really enjoy being to share vital health information with you. I can't think of a better place to be this pre-Christmas weekend. 877-726-TALK is our number. We got a call from Maddie on Long Island, Long Island, as they say. How you doing?
Hi. Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
Good.
I have a question. I was recently diagnosed between in about 4 months apart, two squamous cell carcinomas on a shoulder and on my leg. And I know I heard your show. I've been on hydrochlorothiazide for so many years, I can't even count them. And I am winding down because my pressure.
You mean you're taking a water pill? Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you had said there was a study that people who take that, I think you said are more sensitive to that type of skin cancer.
Hmm. Yeah, but that may be just a minor effect.
Oh.
You know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question is this: if I start taking niacinamide. Mm-hmm. Will that affect my liver tests when I go to the doctor for exams?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, first of all, you point out that there is a nutritional protective factor against squamous cell cancer and basal cell cancer, and that's vitamin B3. And vitamin B3 comes in various forms. There's niacin, which some people take to lower their cholesterol, and it causes flushing. It's also used in orthomolecular medicine for mental conditions like schizophrenia in high doses. And that definitely can affect the liver. And so whenever we have somebody on high-dose niacin, we check liver function from time to time just to make sure it's not damaging the liver. When it comes to niacinamide, niacinamide does not cause flushing. It's also sometimes referred to as nicotinamide. Niacinamide, vitamin B3, does not usually cause liver problems, but in someone who has pre-existing liver problems, pretty high doses need to be monitored. I mean, if you don't have liver problems to begin with, you're not probably going to get liver problems from 500 milligrams of niacinamide a couple of times daily, which is the recommended dose for preventing skin cancers from recurring. You know, it's not like a 100% protective bulwark against all kind of skin problems. Melanomas can still occur in spite of using niacinamide, but you get about a 40 to 60% reduction in recurrence of skin cancers when you take niacinamide. So I have some patients who are extraordinarily prone to that. Usually they're light-skinned individuals who spent too much time in the sun in their youth, and now they're reaping this harvest of every time they go to the dermatologist, it's another biopsy or a Mohs procedure to excise a suspicious area. So, yeah, that's fine. That's worthwhile. You can take that. I doubt if it's the hydrochlorothiazide that's causing the problem. It's probably, what color hair do you have?
It used to be dark brown.
Dark brown, but you're relatively light-skinned, right?
I grew up on the beach in Long Beach, Long Island.
There you go. Okay. Well, you know, now it's you're experiencing the legacy of overexposure to the sun. You know, in those days, we used to use like coconut oil, you know, and
right.
You know, mineral oil on the skin, right? You know, that was there was no protective barrier. You want to actually grease yourself up, but it offered no protection, and you spent hours and hours in the sun, and you know, until your skin turned leathery and dark. And now we're getting skin cancers in our senior years.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to say, through your effort, I have really gotten my blood pressure down to just about normal.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things is CBD oil I take twice a day.
Oh, yeah.
And it calms me.
You mean because it has a calmative effect on you?
A slight, slight calmative.
Yeah.
And also, I stopped eating after dinner and trying to eat earlier and earlier.
Bingo.
I just went to the doctor yesterday, and my pressure was normal.
Awesome. Okay. And is he suggesting that you cut back on the hydrochlorothiazide and give it a shot?
He has me down now to 2 a week.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. We almost off. I mean, it's like nothing.
Almost off.
Yeah. You take the 12.5 or the 25?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 12.5.
Oh, that's almost like nothing. That's like you're almost on nothing now. So that congratulations. That's really nice to hear. Great feedback.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it. All right. All the best to you. Have a happy holiday. And here's an item that, keep in mind, holiday season, we have crazy schedules, a lot of people traveling, there's jet lag, there's lots of parties, so we stay up late. Headline, junk food cravings linked to lack of sleep, study suggests. So it's actually a vicious cycle. We eat a lot of junk, and it disrupts sleep. But also, the sleep disruption itself can cause us to crave more. Having even one night without sleep, according to a study, leads people to view junk food more favorably, according to research. This may have to do with certain hormones that govern appetite. And yes, sleep deprivation can make you hungrier, and you'll ultimately gain weight. So one of the worst strategies during the holidays, make sure you get adequate sleep. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. An embarrassing gaffe at the beginning of the show. I referenced Grace Slick of Jefferson Airplane with the famous line, feed your head. Well, of course, in those days, we were feeding our head certain other things than vitamins, minerals, and nutraceuticals. But I misattributed her to the Grateful Dead. Oh, my goodness. I must really be suffering from cognitive decline. And so I wanted to correct that for some of you astute listeners who caught that gaffe. And a nod to our producer, Al, who's still somewhat cognitively intact, at least enough to call that to my attention, although lost in the 60s. All right. 877-726-8255 is our number. The impact of diet intervention on autoimmunity, that could be really important for the tens of millions of Americans who suffer from autoimmune problems. But before we get to that, let's talk to one of our callers, 877-726-8255, Jill in Middletown, New York. How you doing?
Hi, doctor. I read once in Dr. Andrew Weil's book that you should avoid white button mushrooms at all costs because they're very toxic.
Really?
Is that true?
Really? On what basis? I mean, I'd like to know on what basis you should avoid white button mushrooms. Was it because of the way that they're prepared or chemically treated, or that they're the white bread equivalent of the brown mushrooms, which may have more nutrient value? I'm not even sure why that would be.
Well, yeah, I don't remember because it was a few years ago, and it just occurred to me since I started eating them recently, and I said, gee, maybe I shouldn't be.
No, actually, we did an entire program a couple of years ago about the benefits of mushrooms, whether they be white or the darker mushrooms like cremini mushrooms and shiitake mushrooms. And there are some substances in mushrooms that are really beneficial, whether they're dark or light. The difference is that you can actually turn mushrooms dark, just like you can turn people dark by exposing them to ultraviolet light. Interesting, huh? Right. Vitamin mushrooms and humans both share the capacity to synthesize vitamin D when exposed to light, ultraviolet light. So actually one of the ways that they make vitamin D. Synthetic vitamin D, that's the vitamin D2, is by exposing mushrooms to ultraviolet light. So yeah, maybe you're going to get a little less vitamin D from a white mushroom, which hasn't been exposed to light. It grows up in the dark. But I can't see a reason why to avoid them. You know, I'd have to ask Dr. Weil, you know, about that next time I run into him. I just wrote a book for Dr. Weil as part of the Weil library of health topics, Integrative Sexual Health. And it's one of the Andrew Weil health series. It's actually a textbook for health professionals. And so maybe I'll get a chance to talk to Dr. Weil in the near future. I'll have to pose that to him.
I know he's a proponent of mushrooms in general, but the particular that one he said was toxic, so I don't know.
Toxic. But I mean, we know about toxic mushrooms. I mean, you go in the woods and you know, say, oh, it looks great. Yeah. And you got to be careful because if you don't, you misidentify a mushroom, you know, you could get a so-called death angel mushroom. And those really can kill you. They actually cause liver failure. So got to beware. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's not the
Could I ask one other question?
Bonus question. All right. Bonus question for Jill. All right. Let's go.
Yes. I just wondered if you should avoid nutritional yeast if you have a yeast overgrowth.
Okay. That's really an interesting question. If you have the so-called yeast connection, or say you have a yeast overgrowth in your intestine, and it's causing you symptoms. And the symptoms could include rashes, allergies, autoimmunity, brain fog. Any number of symptoms can be linked to a yeast overgrowth. We know that live candida is a powerful immune stimulant within the gastrointestinal tract, and it can cause the immune system to go awry in various ways. I mean, this is actually an old theory. And it's been updated recently, and it's actually continues to be validated with new studies that suggest that yeast overgrowth can cause mental symptoms, symptoms of brain fog, symptoms of confusion. It can also trigger Crohn's disease. A fungal overgrowth has been implicated in Crohn's disease, according to some studies recently. So yeast. Bad thing. So what about the nutritional yeast that you might eat? Well, you know, back in the 60s, nutritional yeast was all the rage. Because why? Well, it's really rich in B vitamins. It's rich in selenium. It's rich in chromium. So it's a good thing in terms of its nutrient value. Here's the problem. First of all, that yeast is dead. So eating that yeast, it's not going to cause a bunch of yeast to grow in your intestinal tract and cause you to have yeast overgrowth. That's not the problem. It's not like, you know, taking raw yeast that you use to make bread and eating that. Nobody does that. But when you are sensitized to yeast, you may have a cross-reaction. You were sensitized to the yeast that's within your gut. You may cross-react to other fermented foods, vinegar, for example, red wine, bread, which is made with yeast, and, of course, nutritional yeast. So there's some people really get bent out of shape. They really feel terrible when they take nutritional yeast. But it depends. It depends. It depends on the person. It depends on, you know, whether they have candida or yeast problems. And some people can do okay with yeast. All right. Have you experienced this yourself? I mean, is something does yeast bother you? A beer is a real culprit for some people. Beer just gets a lot of people really bent out of shape. They really feel terrible from beer because of the high yeast content.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm not even sure I have it. My doctor prescribed nystatin in case I had it because I have symptoms, a lot of symptoms.
Okay.
And so I've been eating nutritional yeast. I just wondered if I should avoid it.
Yeah, I mean, you could do a trial of elimination of it and see if it makes a difference in how you feel. And then, you know, if you think you feel better, then re-challenge yourself. Have a whole bunch of nutritional yeast and see if it triggers a recurrence of your symptoms. Give it a shot.
Right.
All right?
Okay, thank you very much, doctor.
Thank you. All right. This item, autoimmunity. Well, autoimmunity means when your immune system, which is designed to protect you, turns against you. And the analogy that I sometimes use is it's a little bit like, you know, the guards in banks or guards with you know, who maybe unload money from Brinks trucks, they're armed sometimes. And bad guys come in, try to steal the money, and a shootout ensues. Well, when a shootout ensues, the target, of course, is the invaders or the bad guys, but sometimes there's collateral damage and innocent bystanders get shot. That's what happens in an autoimmune reaction, is the immune system's responding appropriately to something, but because the immune reaction is over exuberant, it targets parts of you, your brain, as in multiple sclerosis, your intestine in Crohn's disease, your joints and rheumatoid arthritis, all parts of your body in lupus, because lupus can affect virtually all of your body, the skin and certain autoimmune skin conditions, and on it goes. So thyroid too, Hashimoto's thyroiditis is an autoimmune condition. So could a change in diet be beneficial to people with autoimmune diseases such as lupus? That's what researchers at Yale University asked recently. And they tested this out on a mouse model of lupus. Now, of course, we've been curing all kinds of diseases in mice. Paralyzed mice are walking. Mice with Parkinson's disease are normalized. It sometimes doesn't perfectly translate to humans, but it's a model nonetheless. And so to investigate the potential impact of diet, researchers gave mice resistant starch in a diet that mimics a high-fiber diet in humans. And what they found is that it changed the microbiome in a way that discouraged the worsening of autoimmunity in these mice who are highly prone to a mouse version of lupus. So clearly, this establishes a principle, which is that changing the diet can change the microbiome, which has an impact on autoimmunity. And yes, the paleo diet incorporates, it's not just eating a lot of meat. It's not, you know, Fred Flintstone eating brontosaurus steaks. It involves the use of fresh vegetables and fruits and sometimes what are called resistant starches. Now, what are resistant starches? Resistant starches, there are several types. You can find resistant starch in grains, seeds, and legumes. They resist digestion. There's also resistant starch when certain starchy foods like potatoes and rice are cooked and then cooled. This is called retrogradation. So you don't eat the foods hot, you cool them down. It's like I tell our patients who we want to give them resistant starch, I tell, you know, make a potato salad. Kick the potatoes, cool them down, and then you'll get resistant starch. You can also get resistant starch from such sources as acacia fiber. And inulin from Jerusalem artichokes is a good source of resistant starch. What does the resistant starch do? Well, it's resistant to digestion. But the bacteria feed on the resistant starch and break them down, and they form short-chain fatty acids, including something called butyrate. They travel to your bloodstream, liver, and the rest of your body, where they may have beneficial effects. So these resistant starches may tamp down inflammation in autoimmune disease, and this is a very beneficial principle that we can harness in the treatment of these conditions. 877-726-8255. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to ensure your skeletal health. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Bone Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links from my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. As always, I strive to provide you with the tools you need to make informed choices beyond the cookie-cutter care of today's healthcare system, and these new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle, the same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you know that fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, that support your cardiovascular, brain, nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. My preferred fish oil brand is Carlson. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to store. They source only the highest quality deep cold water fish using traditional sustainable methods. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity. I use Carlson myself, recommend it to my patients, and I've included Carlson in the Intelligent Medicine Protocol Starter Kit, available on my website, drhoffman.com. Carlson award-winning omega-3 nutritional supplements are available in soft gels and liquid form for those who have trouble swallowing pills. For more information, go to www.carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. We're live and we're taking your questions. Yeah, well, somebody's got to man the forts on a holiday weekend, and we're here. 877-726-8255 is our number. We got a call from Fred in Atlanta, GA. How you doing? Hey, Fred.
Yes, hello.
Hi, sir.
Yes.
What's your question, sir? You're on.
My 85-year-old wife is in very advanced stage of cancer and Parkinson's, but she has a troublesome trigger finger that's quite painful and just a real nuisance. We've been using a splint on it.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering, is there anything else you can do to maybe prevent it from bending?
Okay, so well, with trigger finger, I mean, I'm not sure how trigger finger is related to her other conditions. Probably not so much.
No relation. She did have some Cipro in the hospital last week.
Well, you know, Cipro can sometimes cause can cause damage to the joints and cartilage.
Right.
In fact, the latest is that Cipro, the news is that that type of medications, the fluoroquinolones, can increase the risk of what's called aortic dissection, which is, a dread condition, aortic aneurysm and so on. All right, so, coming back to trigger finger is a condition where basically your finger kind of gets crooked and you have to unravel it, especially in the morning, you know, straighten it out. And it's also referred to as tenosynovitis. And it's usually treated with, you know, either physical therapy, sometimes a steroid shot. One of the innovative treatments for it is something called extracorporeal shockwave therapy. You deliver a shock to that area, and it sort of breaks up the tissue and allows the finger to unfurl. You know, sometimes there's a surgical release. I don't know if she's a candidate for that with all her other medical conditions. Is it amenable to nutritional support? I once had a trigger finger, and, you know, trigger finger is usually a self-limited condition. It tends to get better in relatively healthy individuals. I don't know about an 85-year-old with all these other accompanying medical conditions. But I had a brief bout of it, took a lot of fish oil and curcumin, and, just basically did some, physical therapy moves with it. Ultimately, the finger normalized, and no problems going forward. Let's talk to Marilyn. Welcome. How you doing, Marilyn?
I'm fine.
You're in Connecticut, Marilyn?
No, in New York.
Oh, in New York.
Manhattan.
Okay, got it.
This is about my 80-year-old husband.
Yeah.
And he recently had a CT scan of his lung. And one of the things that it said on the CT scan was that there was severe coronary artery calcification was seen.
Okay.
That's what it said.
Yeah.
What can we do about that, do you think?
Well, okay, so first of all, has he had any symptoms? Is he, experiencing chest pain, pressure, shortness of breath?
No.
What's going on there? Okay, so...
He has had, high blood pressure for years when he takes all kinds of things for...
So it's a risk
factor. In terms of magnesium and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
So CT scanning is one way of determining if you have cardiovascular risk. In fact, I recommend often what's something called the ultrafast CT or EBT heart scanning, which is based on a CT-like principle. where you measure the calcium in your coronary arteries. So this is like a warning sign that he's at risk. Now, you know, 80-year-olds are going to have, by and large, on average, some calcification. And so he probably needs some additional testing. He probably needs a stress test just to make sure that he's not at high risk. But then he needs, really a program to reduce his coronary risk. And that would include, exercise once his stress test demonstrates he's capable of it, and a very clean diet, especially a low-carb diet. He needs some attention given to his cholesterol. But cholesterol is not the entire name of the game. If you're overweight, you suffer from metabolic syndrome, and you have high levels of insulin, and you have a lot of inflammation, a high C-reactive protein. These are risk factors that can be modified with diet, exercise, certain supplements. He needs lots of fish oil. He could also take MK7, vitamin K. That's been shown to slow the progression of coronary artery calcification. I would recommend something like bergamot as a natural way of lowering cholesterol and also reducing arterial inflammation. Olive leaf extract is very potent. I mean, it's sort of a comprehensive program for reducing coronary risk. All right?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, but more, more testing. I think you don't just leave a finding like that alone. You just say, well, okay, what are we going to do about this? We're not just writing him off merely because he's an octogenarian. He may have many more healthy years ahead of him if he fends off heart disease. Okay. This item has to do with a way that we can reduce unhealthy snack purchases. You know, a lot of people talk about taxing soda and taxing snacks, and I'm not for that because it just means more money in the government coffers, and the bureaucrats don't know what to do with the money, and then it penalizes the people who still end up buying the stuff. A simple measure, study shows that removing sweets from checkouts is linked to a dramatic fall in unhealthy snack purchases. You know, I was winning in the line at Trader Joe's, and on the way out, there's all these alluring Christmas goodies there. There's, sprinkles on Christmas trees and chocolates and candies. In the wait-out line is a long line. You're going to be tempted to throw something in your basket. Take that stuff out of the checkout area, and people will buy less junk. It's utter simplicity, and it ought to be enforced. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 877-726-8255. Great hour. Call us next hour for more.
If you're a big sports fan like me, sometimes the best part about watching a football game are the pre- and post-game shows. Well, it's the same for probiotics. The most important part of probiotics are the prebiotics and postbiotics that come along. Not all probiotics have this superior combination. That's why I only buy Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. You see, prebiotics feed the probiotic colonies in your intestines, and postbiotics are the organic nutrients produced by Dr. O'Hara's 3-year fermentation process that become the foundation for long-term colonization of the good bacteria in your body. This is so important. No other probiotic formula has this. As I get older, I want to protect my health the best I can and use only the best supplements that are available. So, score a touchdown for your health. Get Dr. O'Hara's probiotics today.
Touchdown!
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at natural health retailers and online. Don't accept a substitute.